happy, I'm happy, I'm going to get me suit measured.
Hello and welcome back to Pod on the Tyne, your fully independent Newcastle United podcast. My name's Taylor Payne and it's a Friday bonus podcast with George Calkin and Chris Woff. How the devil are you, Georgie? All right?
Got the full-on Great North Run Twitch now, so...
You've got the Twitch, have you?
I just want to do it now. I want to get on with it. I want to get it over with.
What are you feeling? Are you feeling excitement? Nerves? Are you feeling anxious? Are you feeling relaxed?
Well, it's all of those things, isn't it? It's so haven't
nauseous.
Really, nauseous, yeah. I know that I'm going to get very, 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 very upset. So I have that sort of looming over me. It's the day when all my emotion comes out, or a lot of it does. And so, yeah, and you know, you kind of scale back a bit in your training the week of the Great North Run. And so I've got that sort of bundled up energy, which I want to get out. So, but yes, just to repeat, Ollie, producer Ollie, Jacob, Boy Wonder, and I are all doing the Great North Run this year. And we're doing it for the Sir Bobby Robson Foundation as per. So it'd be great to see them. It's always the best day of the year. Can't wait for it, really. But yeah, twitchy.
Lovely stuff. Chris Woff, how about you?
I am not running the Great North Run, so I can't pretend to have the same sort of bag of nerves in my... Do you have a bag of nerves in your tummy? You probably don't. That's a weird turn of phrase that I've used there.
Have you had your second breakfast yet, Chris?
Chris, so like this week I did a little training one with Luke Edwards, our colleague, who's also doing it for Bobby's team. Look us up on Just Giving, please, if you haven't already, and consider sponsoring us. That would be great. Bobby's team 2025. Anyway, I did a little training run with Luke, who burnt me off at the end. And Luke, of course, being Luke, boasted about that. And Chris said this was a case of the tortoise beating the snail. Coming from the Great North Run chicken, I thought that was a little bit cheeky.
How are you anyway, Taylor?
I'm not too bad, Chris. I'm not too bad at all. It's been a decent week. Did you watch Germany-Slovakia last night? Did you see any of that?
No. There's one of my friends actually messaged me and said, oh, you're going to have to watch more international football now that Newcastle have bought even more internationals. And No, I did not. I saw that they struggled badly by the looks of it, lost.
Ooh, they did, yes.
Voltimata did start, but did not score. I am going to be looking back at some of it on Y Scout to see how he did perform and follow him on Sunday as well.
He didn't see much of the ball, Chris. They were struggling to get the ball to him. Some lad in the midfield who plays for Liverpool, I can't remember his name entirely, but he was struggling to get the ball through to him. There was one point, though, when they played the ball to him, he let the ball run through his legs and the entire opposition defence went in the other direction. And it was lovely. It was a really nice moment. So I would check that out on Y Scout if you've got nothing better to do with your time, Chris, which it sounds like.
I shall do. I mean, there was an outside possibility that I was going to actually be going to Germany on Sunday to see him play. We couldn't make the logistics work. I mean, really, the game I wanted to be at or would like to go to is DR Congo playing in South Sudan, I think, this weekend. I'd quite like to see Yuan Visser playing. That would be an experience, a different place to go to. So.
Definitely. It's always nice to see Dr. Congo pop up on the picture list, isn't it? I do love seeing that. Right, Voldemort, I couldn't score past Dubravka last night. Let's hope someone can when we face Burnley. Let's get straight into an email, chaps. Just wondering if Chris or George can explain when Newcastle will announce their new director of football and CEO, since David Hockinson and Ross Wilson were apparently going to be announced already. I think fans would really like to hear about what they offer and why they're being considered. And that comes from Simon. Well, Simon, you're in luck. David Hockinson has started work as Newcastle United CEO. Chris, you've been following this one quite closely, haven't you?
Yes. I mean, I don't know. The assumption from Simon's message is that there was ever a specified date. I don't think it was ever said exactly when they were necessarily going to come in. But with Hockinson, it has been dragging on quite a while. I mean, the process in general, he was sort of first contacted, I believe, in about December time. And obviously, Darren Eales had announced at the end of September that he would be leaving. So even from then to December is a fair amount of time. But then from December to then being appointed on September the 4th, or confirmed on September the 4th, is a heck of a long way. It's a one where I can't pretend I'm not relieved, not only because obviously Newcastle very much need direction leadership at the top, but it is something which given I had a piece which was able to go out almost immediately on who he is and exactly what he will bring, it's something I'd put a heck of a lot of effort into over that course of the last probably 8 to 10 weeks, almost gambling on the fact. I mean, it was all of my information from people I trusted was that this was going to happen. But until something like that actually happens, similar to a transfer, you're always a little bit concerned that maybe I'm going to have wasted a large part of my life during, which was also a very, very busy transfer window. But yeah, so there was relief in the end that Hopkins has arrived. And I think it's absolutely huge moment for Newcastle. We'll come on a bit later to Ross Wilson and him potentially coming in. But in terms of Hopkins in general, we know that Darren Eales has been on medical leave since June, and to not have that leadership alongside, not having a sporting director during a very turbulent summer, has really been disruptive. And Newcastle need longevity at the top. We have to hope that Hopkinson will bring that. He is moving across. Some of his family are going to come with him. So for that, we just have to hope that this is finally the right appointment for the successor to Darren Eales.
Do you want to give us a little bit of his history, Chris, and where he comes from, what he's done in the past?
Yeah, so basically, he was born in Toronto. He's from Toronto in Canada. And for his hometown clubs, he actually started off as a salesperson, essentially. He went door to door, but also worked on the phones to sell tickets. Initially, I think it was the Toronto Raptors, who were the new, at the time, NBA expansion side. Yeah, of course. And he sort of worked his way up to in that group, which is the sort of Maple Leafs group. They're called MLSE. So that is a group which went on to own the Toronto Maple Leafs, who are absolutely huge in Toronto ice hockey. NHL side, you have the Toronto Raptors, NBA. There's also Toronto FC, the MLS side, who did have Matty Longstaff last season. He's now moved on to another side in Canada. But so he was there for 24 years, worked up from the sales side to eventually, over those 24 years, become sort of chief commercial officer. And as he was there, worked on some very big deals, including he was heavily involved in a naming rights deal for the arena, which both the Raptors and the Maple Leafs play at. And it was, at the time, this was in 2017, I think, the most lucrative sponsorship deal of a stadium in North America up until that point. It was a 20-year deal worth $800 million Canadian dollars, which is sort of like £450 million, roughly, I think, in sort of today's exchange rate. So that was a huge deal for them at the time. He then moved to Real Madrid to be head of global partnerships, which in some ways was a step down in terms of seniority. But he went there, I think, partly because it's a bigger organiser. At the time, they were the third biggest sporting organisation in the world. I don't know if that's changed around since then, but despite being this mammoth club, globally, they probably weren't bringing in the revenue that they necessarily wanted. And he sort of took on that challenge to move into both soccer or football, if you want to call that, and also to sort of expand that beyond. And then from there, he was headhunted to go to New York, to the Madison Square Garden Group. Obviously, Madison Square Garden, probably the most famous arena, or one of the most famous arenas in the world there. The New York Knicks, the NBA side player, the New York Rangers, who are NHL, they are owned by the Madison Square Garden Group. He was there initially on the business side and then moved up to president and chief operating officer at a time when their revenue spiked massively, partly because of the success on the pitch, but also because NBA had relaxed the rules to a degree and the New York Knicks tried to sort of push this globalization, global appeal, which he led. And he left there early last year and has been, according to friends, waiting for the sort of right opportunities, turned down job offers, they claim, and the right opportunity he sees is Newcastle United.
Fair play. Did you just read out your entire article there, Chris? Is that what that was?
It's a very good article, by the way. Chris has spent a lot of time working on this. I know it's been very frustrating for people not having this news announced, but yeah, there's a lot of background. Chris has obviously been talking to a lot of people, including those close to David Hopkinson. Just in passing, Chris, we definitely do want to call it football, not soccer. I just want to, I know we have a lot of...
It was more from his, I assume from his perspective, the fact that when he's leaving Canada, I presume it's called soccer in Canada, I don't know.
I'm just saying that for the record. We have a lot of American people who listen to us and we love you all, but I'm sorry, football, that is non-negotiable.
Definitely not.
Secondly, I've been to New York quite a few times in the last few years. Obviously, I've got family in America, and every time I go and see the Knicks play or the Rangers. And, you know, if that sort of experience is you know, has any kind of relation to what Newcastle can look forward to, that is very, 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 very exciting.
So, Chris, what does David Hopkinson bring to the job of CEO of Newcastle United?
Well, one thing that he is going to bring to Tyneside is 3-year-old Chiweenie dog Lou, which is not something I thought I was going to be writing about as part of a piece on Newcastle CEO. I had to Google what a Chiweenie was. It's a cross between Chihuahua and another breed, which I can't quite remember. But yes, in a more serious sort of note, what he will bring and what they hope he's going to bring is what we've spoken about basically ever since the takeover happened, which is the need to bring in greater commercial revenue to expand the global appeal of Newcastle. And partly or largely that's to do with PSR and making sure that Newcastle can then compete regularly with the very top sides financially, which will then allow them to have a squad that they can sustain and may not have a situation that they had this summer with a certain striker who will remain nameless, whereby they maybe couldn't offer him the wages that he wanted or couldn't necessarily be able to guarantee that they would be able to sustain the level they have. We know that long-term in sports, usually wage spend correlates with how you perform on the field, and Newcastle at the minute cannot spend what the so-called Big Six can. Their revenue is dwarfed by those clubs. I mean, in the article, I sort of look at it, and if you look at turnover, Newcastle's turnover is almost half what the average for the sort of Big Six was. This is for 2023-24, yeah, which is the last full season of accounts that we have. Their match day income is less than half, and their commercial income is about a third, if not a quarter, of the very biggest sort of figures that, sorry, the average figure there. It's dwarfed by sort of Man City and others. And so he will is in largely for the business side. He technically, hierarchically, is going to be at the top, the top employee at the club in terms of the one reporting directly into the board. So technically, he will be above the sporting director and obviously above Eddie Howe, but he's not here to oversee footballing operations. Yes, theoretically, he is above them, but he's not going to be hands-on in that regard. That's not what his strength is. He will delegate to the right people in that area, so that will be the sporting director. We expect to be Ross Wilson. That will be Eddie Howe. What he is trying to do is facilitate for them the amount of money that they can bring in and sort of to strike more commercial deals to make sure that Newcastle are expanding this global appeal, while at the same time the challenge with that is that, and I mentioned this in the article, is that there is tension there with what Newcastle is as a historical club, and, you know, not sort of their current fans not feeling like they're being exploited financially in terms of can you really further increase the ticket prices at St. James's Park after 3 years of 5% rises. How do you actually do that in the medium term to get those funds? But then, obviously, crucially, the other big calls are on infrastructure. We know that St. James's Park has been delayed in terms of what happens there. Do they move? Do they stay? Do they renovate? And also training ground and the like. He has to oversee those. He has to come in and try and really speed up the process that there is at the top. I think there's a frustration really with PIF being process-driven, and although that's very good in terms of from a due diligence point of view, really there need to be more dynamic. There needs to be a quicker pace, and it can't just be used as an excuse for indecision.
Yeah, I just want to chip in with a kind of couple of related points there. The first thing, just to kind of go back to the start, we have to sort of say goodbye and thank you to Darren Eales, and yes, you know, to wish him the very best of health moving forward. Newcastle have won a trophy under his watch. That's an extraordinary achievement. Newcastle have qualified again for the Champions League. It's not, of course, his fault, his doing, that he's been on medical leave this summer. And like, I don't want to get into the realm of pointing fingers or anything like that, but you know, for him to have made this announcement 12 months ago now, only to be leaving now, having been absent over the course of the summer, I just think is, you know, it's not how it should have played out at Newcastle. What we have now moving forward is a new appointment and an opportunity to kind of reset relationships. The thing that Chris says about David Hopkinson not being kind of directly involved in the football side of things is obviously right in terms of his sort of experience and expertise. But Newcastle needs another figurehead. It needs somebody to take some of the attention, some of the pressure off Eddie Howe, who's become the kind of de facto spokesman for Newcastle on everything, yeah, because PIF never say a word. That relationship will be really, really important, but will be vital. I mean, it's, you know, it's always said that like the most important relationship at a club is between manager and owner, or manager and chairman, you know, manager and chief executive in this case. They will be working in tandem, hand in hand, Eddie's job is to make the team better. David Hopkinson's job is to make the club better. But those two things are completely interconnected.
Yes,
and
of course.
Our understanding is that they've already been a number of conversations between the two men, a good relationship. That is so important. It's so important to the whole club. It's important that this communication filters down from the top of the club into the dressing room, into the manager's office, that it's a two-way street. Everyone knows what everybody else is doing, and that there's a real feeling of being in it together. And I don't think there's been that for quite a while now. Again, not all for reasons that have been inside the club's control, but the loss of Amanda Staveley and Mehrdad Gudusi took away an intimacy from the team. The arrival of Paul Mitchell put strain on relationships, and there was a lot of excitement when Paul Mitchell came in, because it was like there's been this sort of fetishism almost about roles being filled at Newcastle. And although that's important when you're coming from where the club was, which was having basically a one-man band in Lee Chandley, you know, it's important that Newcastle have a proper structure. The vital thing is relationships. It's no good having someone in a role if they're the wrong person for the role, which was definitely the case with Paul Mitchell, as it turned out. It's got to have good people knowing what their job is and that collection of relationships. That's why I'm really excited about David Hopkinson. He's an expert in his field. He's got a great track record. And now it's about building that into relationships at Newcastle.
He's also got lots of nicknames, Chris, as well, apparently. But let's keep it respectful with David on the podcast.
Well, he's known as Hop or Hoppy to his friends, and has been since, I think, basically middle school or whatever you would refer to it in Canada. But the thing about him, and before I touch upon him, I just want to say, when George, I echo everything George said about Darren Eales. Also, Darren Eales is coming back from his medical leave for the next fortnight to oversee a transition alongside David Hopkinson, which feels important as well to really give him a kickstart that he can explain to him everything that's there, and if there's any questions, or to show him exactly the direction going forward and to build those relationships. But Hopkinson, from everyone you speak to, he's very charismatic, and he's when George speaks about communication, I've watched some speeches that he's given, and he seems to be someone who I think really can engage in that regard. Now, it's not that he has to speak every single week. Obviously, that's the manager's job about the football and the like, but it would be nice to have someone who comes out and can answer the questions that go above what Eddie Howe's pay grade really is, or what he should be discussing. But also, communication, I think, internally is very important. There are a lot of people I spoke to who followed him to multiple organisations that he'd worked at. They've described him as the best leader they've worked under, as someone who is just wonderful to speak with, and who basically they'd run through a brick wall from, was one of the quotes that was given. And so let's hope that he can instill that sort of culture at Newcastle, and that they get the direction that they really need from him and quickly, because it feels like there has been a bit of a vacuum at the top of the club, which is inevitable given what's been there. And so he needs to come in and quite quickly address that.
It's a very different sort of challenge for him as well, George, isn't it? It's, he's came from American sport, from ice hockey and from basketball, and, you know, Premier League elite levels of football. He's worked at Real Madrid, but it is a very different challenge for him.
Yes, I guess so. I mean, I would have thought that a lot of these things are transferable, though. And, you know, Darren Eales talked about Newcastle being like a 100-year-old startup. That was a phrase he used. Yeah. He rode back on that a bit, because obviously he didn't want to sort of disrespect the people who were at the club. But the point he was making was that, you know, Newcastle in lots of ways had to start from scratch because everything had been outsourced under Ashley, stripped back and outsourced. It was a tiny operation in terms of retail and commercial, that sort of stuff, because it was all done through Sports Direct. And so Newcastle had to start again. They're not at that point now. They have made big strides. I know that people are frustrated about the pace of money coming in. Now the task is to grow it. And, on paper, he looks like the perfect person for the job. As I say, it's about relationships, but it feels like a good moment for a reset. And of course, you know, the next part of that is the next sporting director.
Just very briefly, in terms of that feeling like it's the right time for reset, it does feel like that. But as frustrated as people are with things like the stadium decision and the like, you wouldn't necessarily want Hopkinson to come in and just immediately be making those decisions. He wants to come in and have that impact immediately, but he also needs to come in and learn everything about it, learn, particularly with a decision as big as a stadium. I know there's all the people who've done the work beforehand, and really the decision actually seems to be with ownership now, but even so, he needs to come in and get to grips with exactly what these decisions are, the historical connotations of that beyond just the sort of financial. And so we want things to speed up, but also I think that there needs to be an acceptance that he's not going to come in and tomorrow all of these big announcements suddenly happen because he is just arriving at this point.
Of course, I totally accept what you say, Chris, and I kind of agree with it. He has to be given, you know, the opportunity to find his feet and sort of have a look at these decisions. That, of course, becomes a problem because what Newcastle have lacked is dynamism. You know, hopefully that changes moving forward, and it needs to, because until some of these big decisions get taken, it will feel like the club's in limbo, that there is this feeling of everything being kicked into the long grass time and time again.
Yeah.
They do have to press a button. I think once the button has been pressed on a big project, it'll feel different. The whole club will feel different. There has been a lack of dynamism. Now, David Hopkinson, by all accounts, is a dynamic man, a dynamic individual, and I just kind of look forward to hearing from him, look forward to seeing some of that in person, because the club needs to be more dynamic.
And finally, Simon's email also mentioned Ross Wilson. Chris, the name strongly rumoured as our next director of football. Is that still the expectation?
That's very much our expectation. He's the chief football officer at Nottingham Forest. He's been at Southampton previously. He was at Rangers. And that's very much the direction of travel. We believe that's going to happen. I don't have exact time frame. I have asked on it. People were asking on social media after this. But I don't think it's necessarily going to be in the too distant future. He potentially has a period of notice to serve. I don't know if he's serving that or is still to serve it. I'm not entirely sure, but that is very much who we expect to fill that role. And hopefully he's someone who Eddie Howe knows, other people at the club know, and hopefully, as George mentioned crucially about relationships earlier, hopefully that is a better fit and they're better bedfellows between Howe and Wilson than necessarily Mitchell and Howe were.
Yeah, and of course, you know, we've seen a kind of a couple of different versions of sporting director at Newcastle post takeover. You know, Dan Ashworth, who was seen as a sort of architect, a man who set the tone, who set the culture at a club. Paul Mitchell was kind of very, very much viewed as a transfer guru, which is ironic, bearing in mind that Newcastle basically didn't sign anybody less than 12 months at the club. I still think he's left Newcastle in the lurch. I think the problem, what, you know, there's room for dynamic tension. There's room for creative tension within businesses and companies and institutions and all of those things. Chris and I have that all the time. There is a proper competitive tension between Chris and I. That this podcast screams it, doesn't it, Chris?
Is it a love-hate relationship, George?
Yes. No, we do love each other. I'm kind of joking. But anyway, like, those things can work. But the problem was that Paul Mitchell came into Newcastle. He tried to make it his own. He is I'm trying to think of a kinder word than arrogant, but maybe there isn't one. But he's got like a swagger about him.
He's abrasive, I think, is a word that I've heard of.
He's abrasive. And that proved to be damaging at Newcastle. And people didn't recover. So, you know, it's not necessarily about everybody having to be nicey-nicey with each other all the time. This is an elite operation. That's the big idea. And so, of course, there can be harsh words at times. But it just did not work with Mitchell. And it's not about Eddie Howe having a yes man working as a sporting director, but it's about having a productive, competitive, elite relationship that can drive the club forward, everybody singing from the same hymn sheet. That didn't exist with Paul Mitchell. The exciting thing, again, about Ross Wilson is that he should be able to work in tandem with Eddie Howe, someone who he knows, someone they have a pre-existing relationship. He is kind of seen as an all-rounder as well, somebody who can continue the process that Dan Ashworth started in terms of building the club up, building up all the different departments. He's not sort of viewed as a recruitment specialist, but he will take a hand in all of that. And, you know, it is very much a collective, and he will be part of that collective.
Very interesting indeed. Best of luck to David as he starts work. And let's hope Ross Wilson, if it is to be him, is installed as director of football very soon. Right then, Chris, any more updates before we move on?
Yes, just official confirmation of Newcastle United's squad for the Champions League. It has now been confirmed and there aren't any major surprises, but as I've mentioned previously, Newcastle can't have a full 25-man squad. The reason behind that is that they do not have any homegrown, quote-unquote, players, club-trained players this time, having sold Sean Longstaff and Paul Dummett qualified 2 years ago. Neither of them are there. So Newcastle can only name 21 senior players within the squad. That means that they've left out club captain Jamal Lascelles. Mark Gillespie and John Ruddy are also omitted, as there's only two goalkeepers named. And then Harrison Ashby is not named either, which is not surprising because he is unlikely to feature much. We expected him to go out on loan, and he hasn't yet. Something to note as well is that, I mean, every other senior player is within that squad. So all of the new signings, Johan Wisse, Nick Voltimada, Jacob Ramsey, Malik Chow and Aaron Ramsdale, they are all named within that squad. But the players that they don't need to actually confirm in the A list, as it's called, is the B list players, who are players under the age of 21. So Lewis Hall and Lewis Miley are registered in the B list, and that means they still can play, and that gives Newcastle a bit of flexibility there. They have a very strong squad. Yes, it's a real shame for Lascelles because he did play a couple of years ago, did very, very well, particularly in the PSG home game. But Newcastle have a very strong Champions League squad. They had very briefly in the spring contemplated whether they needed to bring in Tim Krull or Fraser Forster as a third choice goalkeeper instead of keeping on John Ruddy, just because that would have freed them up another spot, so they could have named a 22-man squad because of those players qualifying as being club trained. But in the end, they felt they would have the depth, and the fact that Hall and Miley are in the lower group going forward, it's something they still need to address, because they ideally would like to be able to name more senior players. But for now, that is Newcastle's Champions League squad until at least January.
There you go. Right then, drop us an email, podonthetine@gmail.com, if you've got anything you want us to talk about, and follow us on Twitter, X and Blue Sky, @podonthetine. And why not give us a rating and a review on your podcast outlet of choice? Let's have a quick break, chaps, and we'll come back to preview the WSL2 season with the lasses.
My God, who the fuck picks a goalkeeper in a fantasy league?
So here we go again, and Newcastle's women finished 9 points behind league winners London City Lionesses last season. The Lionesses were the only side promoted from what was then the Championship, and despite the size of that gap, it felt agonising, with results not necessarily matching performances and injury time goals turning wins into draws, draws into losses. There was the odd one in the other direction as well, to be fair. However, the second tier of women's football is now rebranded as the WSL2, and there are no fewer than three possible ways to get promoted. Champions go straight up, as before, then there's another automatic promotion spot for a second place finish, or if you finish third in the WSL2, you can still reach the WSL by winning a playoff against the third bottom side from the top tier. No prizes, though, for guessing which of these routes Becky Langley wants to follow, George.
No, not at all. Knowing her as we do, she's only got one mindset. She had the same thing last season, of course. You know, they wanted to go for the three-peat, as you call it. Three consecutive promotions. That did prove beyond them in the end. It was a very positive first season in WSL2, however. But yeah, I went to St. James's Park on Thursday to chat to her about the new season and her hopes for what follows. It was a manic time. Newcastle were signing players left, right and centre on the same day. Very exciting, and have a listen to this chat. Becky, it feels like change has been a constant at this club over the last 3 or 4 years. There's been more of it this summer. Obviously, mm-hmm. There's a new director of football. Yep. There's the squad changes that have happened. There's a new home ground this season.
Yeah, there's been lots of change at the club, and it's something that we've navigated really positively, which I think is a real strength of ours as a women's team. I think the pace of which we've changed across the last few seasons has been the quickest pace probably in women's football. So yeah, lots of change again this summer. Players coming in and out, you know, new staff coming on board to strengthen our support for the players on and off the pitch. And obviously a new change in facilities and a change in stadium, which we'll be playing at. Alongside, obviously, a new director of women's football, Grace, who's come on board, who has been fantastic so far in driving stuff. You know, she joined a couple of weeks ago, and we've seen lots of change in support instantly, really. So yeah, looking forward to getting stuck into the season now. I think we've navigated a lot of challenges on and off pitch in this pre-season, but we're just all excited to get going come Sunday.
And new signings has been a feature, obviously, at the club too over the past few years. It does feel from the outside that there's been some transformative additions, or potentially transformative additions, some really kind of high-profile signings. Jordan Nobbs, obviously, established in England international, but a World Cup winner too, a double World Cup winner in Morgan. Is that kind of one of the lessons, perhaps, of last season? Having a bit more experience, knowledge of playing the biggest games, getting over the line in, at big moments. Is that one of the things that you've been looking for with those signings?
Yeah, for sure, because I think the margins were so tight last season. You know, there was 9 points between us and London City, and there was probably some moments where we showed our inexperience. If we look back to Charlton at home when we were 3-1 up with 5 minutes to go and we drew the game, you know, the game against Sheffield should be 3 points away from home and we've only drawn the game 1-1. And then there's games against our local rivals, Durham, which we felt like we should have taken more from both games. So I think their experience and quality to see games out, and you know, their ability to deal with pressure and their tactical and technical understanding is levels above for sure. So we're really excited to work with this calibre of player and with the players that were departing, which were really good players in terms of their loyalty to the club and their passion for Newcastle. We had to make sure that the players who were replacing them were levels above, and we feel like they are, and that's a positive step forward. Those players who are joining know they're on a project, and I think that's really important because we're not the finished article yet, and there's lots to navigate with that because the environment has to keep improving in terms of facilities, in terms of levels of provision we're offering, analysis, coaching, you know, the facilities piece is ever changing. So I think it's only positive, but like I say, to have the, you know, have the ability to work with these players is unbelievable because they bring so much. Yeah, you can't buy the experience of Morgan in terms of, you know, when she's talking about her experiences, she's talking about the pressure moments of winning a World Cup or the pressure moments of playing in the NWSL for so many years or playing over in France. So her experience is really valuable. I think the only thing we've got to upskill her with probably is actually the Geordie weather and actually when it's raining and freezing cold. It's not quite Florida, but she's brilliant. She's brilliant. And yeah, naturally you see her come on Sunday. She played the second half of the game, and her first touch of the ball is a little give and go and a ball in behind. So she's got natural ability, which we're super excited to work with.
I know the pressure you put yourself under, and I know, you know, when we talked last season, it was, you made no secret of the fact that you wanted promotion.
Yeah.
At the same time, that was always going to be a tough ask, first season at that level. This season, though, I kind of have the feeling that there's almost an expectation as opposed to a pressure that it is promotion this season. That's the target.
For sure, that is my only expectation of my staff, myself and the players. I'm sure that is probably the expectation of the club. They understand the journey we're on. They understand they have to see improvement every single season, which we have done. But I'm still disappointed that 9 points were in it, and I really felt like we should have been pushing into that top three last season. But yeah, my only thought process is, how do we get the team to the WSL? Is this helping me get 3 points on the Sunday throughout the week? So our focus has to be on preparing the players as best as possible on and off the pitch to get the best outcome. So looking forward to the next two sessions before the game on Sunday, and then getting things going on Sunday. But I know I've got a really competitive squad, and I know there's been a real level and gear change this week already in terms of the two sessions we've already done.
And there is a kind of unique opportunity this season. In the past, when you've got promoted, it's been one club going up, one team going up. It's been a pretty kind of brutal set of circumstances. It is different this time with two automatic promotion places and possibly potentially one more as well with the playoff. I mean, it feels important, doesn't it, to make the most of that opportunity?
It does. We have to be making the most of that, but I can't say I was overjoyed in terms of when that first came out, probably because my only mindset is that top spot regardless. So it's a little bit of a safety net, I guess, but we need to be going into every game as Newcastle United, and the expectation is to get 3 points. We have to go into this league season with a big club mentality, and we know what we need to do. So similarly to Eddie, you know, who wants to be striving in the men's Premier League right at the top of the table like he was last season, so do we with this season, and we want to get the team to the highest level.
How do you feel? You know, it's a couple of days before the start of the season. Do you have that sort of twitchiness now, just wanting to get it going?
Yeah, it's just all the last minute bits that you want to get right, because this is totally different feel, like you're playing for 3 points. You know, we were disappointed we didn't win the fixture last week against Bristol, but it's still different. As much as you try and manufacture it and make it feel like the real thing, it's still different because you're not in the heat of the battle playing for 3 points and do or die feeling. So yeah, I'm ultimately just really excited and just want to get going. I'm always in this space in pre-season where you're like, I just want pre-season to end now. It's not the same. So we're excited to get on that bus down to Nottingham and ensure we're in the best place possible come Sunday.
So you mentioned that manic transfer activity, George. We talked briefly about the arrival of Finnish striker Una Sevenius on Wednesday. There have since been two more signings.
It was quite funny. I was at St James's getting ready to talk to Becky. I checked with Sam, the press officer. I said, it's seven new signings, isn't it? There's somebody said, yeah, it is currently, yeah. It was like currently. Okay, shit. Because pretty much by the time I'd finished that conversation, it was nine new signings. So it was a manic day.
Speaking of dynamism and things moving quickly.
yeah. So yeah, very exciting. I mean, it's been another whirlwind summer. Huge change in terms of the dressing room. And two more in the bag.
Yes, fullback Georgia Fox and Dutch international keeper Femke Liefting are loaned in from WSL champions Chelsea. That would be the squad complete now, Chris, yeah?
Yeah, and youth internationals, both of one for England and one for the Netherlands. So in Fox, she's a right back. She's been capped seven times for England in her 23s. She's had two senior league appearances for Chelsea, but she had loans at Charlton, Brighton and Crystal Palace. So she is an exciting arrival in that regard. And then in Femke Liefting, she's actually been called up to the Netherlands senior squad, I believe, hasn't played yet, but has played a lot for their youth side. She joined Chelsea earlier this year from AZ Alkmaar. And creating even a greater international feel really to the side. And I mean, in terms of, you look at Newcastle's investment, but you look at generally in the investment in the women's game at the minute, or the fees that are being paid. We mentioned earlier that London City Lionesses have just gone up, went ahead of Newcastle. They have just broken the world transfer record in the women's game for a signing. They've just signed Grace Guioro from PSG for $1.4 million. That is the third time this summer that the world record fee has been broken in the women's game. Orlando Pride broke it to sign Lisbeth Oval, but also Arsenal broke it to sign Olivia Smith from Liverpool. So there's a lot of investment going on at the minute. Newcastle are trying to get it competitive enough to get from WSL2 up to WSL, but you can see more and more money is also flooding into the game at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, said in that chat with Becky that this is, in terms of where Newcastle are, that it is a massive, massive opportunity this season. It's been so tough to only have one promotion place, and of course it's different. So that, you know, that sort of, that investment filters down. Newcastle are at the absolute bleeding edge of that in the second tier. It's going to be fascinating to see how they do. Obviously, that's a lot of new players to be integrated into the team and to, you know, to find a way of working and playing with the players already there. You know, the other side, apart from the young players, of course, is to see the experience Newcastle have brought in this summer as well. Jordan Nobbs, England international, we all know, huge experience. Morgan Gautrout, who we spoke to not too long ago, World Cup winner, double World Cup winner. And, you know, that is one of the key lessons from last season, I think, that, you know, Newcastle played really well in games. They had, it was a great style on the front foot. They didn't close matches out. That was the big, that was the kind of big thing. That was the big reason why London got ahead of them, was that they just lacked that sort of killer instinct, the experience of playing at that level. And I think the big idea is that they have the talent, they have the depth, and now they hope to have the experience to get them across the line too.
On the football side of things, Newcastle's September fixtures may be on the friendlier end of competition when compared to some of the teams in the WSL2. Two trips to Forest, one this Sunday and then again in the League Cup. Sheffield United, Birmingham and Charlton as well. Four derbies later in the season as well. They were great games last year and there will be at least as much intrigue this time round, George.
Yeah, I mean, those derbies, you know, obviously the Sunderland game speaks for itself, and sure, that'll be at St James's again, and they'll be trying to get the record crowd like they did last season.
Yes.
Can't wait for that. We've got our mate, Amber, at Durham. I'm sure she'll have a point to prove playing Newcastle. Really look forward to those games. Durham are a great club, ambitious, want to go up as well. And then, of course, you know, there's the new thing to throw into the mix. again talk to Becky about this, but playing at Gateshead International Stadium, that will be a different home. It'll be a different experience. It's on grass. I'm pleased about that. You know, seeing the team playing on grass, which is a prerequisite, by the way, for going up. You know, that's something that would have to happen. So there's going to be a lot of freshness about the team and the club this season. They'll want to get off to a strong start. It's really important that they get results straight off and hit the ground running. It was funny saying at the top of the show, I feel all sort of like a bit of a caged tiger at the minute because of the Great North Run. I just got that impression from Becky. There was a real sort of tension about her. Just can't wait to get it going now.
Lovely stuff. Right then, chaps, let's finish off with another email. This one is from Andreas Wiklund in Sweden, and he says, since you were so good at highlighting adopted Geordies abroad, I would like to take this opportunity to thank all Geordies for the incredibly warm welcome I received in London during the final at Wembley in March. I've lived in Sweden all my life and had my walls covered with Alan Shearer posters in my childhood bedroom in the 90s. Since then, I've been a dedicated Newcastle United supporter, mostly from home, but I have also been to Newcastle and St James's twice and absolutely loved it. I don't have any friends who support Newcastle, so I decided to go to London on my own to experience the final atmosphere in person. I was a little nervous, but the way people welcomed me was absolutely fantastic. Never experienced so much love concentrated in such a small area. One man even offered me his ticket to Chelsea away because he thought it was a shame I couldn't go to the match. Unfortunately, I couldn't go to London again too soon, but the gesture makes me smile now as I write about it. I hung out in Covent Garden all weekend, and those were the best days of my life. So thank you to all the Geordies for welcoming me with open arms. I would also like to give a shout out to Marty, born and raised in Newcastle, but now living in Andalusia, who took care of me and got me a ticket to a pub so I could watch the match on TV. I still come out in a cold sweat when I think about the rum and cokes. Very good. Once again, thank you so much. I hope to see you in Newcastle in the future. Some Swedes are apparently doing everything they can to leave Newcastle, but my longing to go there just grows stronger and stronger. How are the lads and lasses? Best regards, Andreas Wiklund. I love reading that sort of stuff, George. It just shows you, doesn't it? People all over the world connecting with Newcastle United.
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you, Andreas, for that. And of course, look forward to seeing you when you next come across. Let us know in advance. We'll go and have a rum and... Maybe not a rum and coke. maybe a different beverage of your choice.
Shout out to the Swedish Mags online as well. They're a great crowd and we'll miss the Isak song. They'll have to come up with a new one for Anthony Elanger, I think. So, no match day pod this weekend. Great North Run is happening, of course, George. Jacob Murphy and Nick Pope starting the race, apparently.
Yeah, I'll take my dictaphone along and I'll shout out a question as I sprint past the finish line. Sprint past the start line.
You're not
going to
sprint past the finish line, George. I'm sorry, but I don't
know. No, I'm definitely not.
If we'd launched our subscription service, we could have mic'd George up around and you could have just had George weeping for 2 hours on the that could be.
I don't weep for 2 hours. I do weep.
How about your nipples, George? Do they weep for 2 hours?
I have got nipple covers, so I'm gonna be wearing. And you can be wearing those. Yeah, that's
you can repurpose those for a Saturday night, can't you? And just wear them around the town.
So producer Ollie and the boy Wonder are both up for it, aren't they?
They are.
Yeah. So we're running for the Sir Bobby Robson Foundation, just to repeat, and we run as part of what we call Bobby's Team, and that is a group of kind of football people, football writers, but also members of Sir Bobby's family and friends. And we run in football style shirts with numbers on the back and our names on the back. And yeah, I kind of, the original idea for doing it was to sort of think, you know, maybe Bobby would be tickled by that, the idea of football writers running for him. It's an incredible charity. Big news this year is that there is going to be a new Sir Bobby Robson Institute right here in Newcastle, a world-class facility which will improve and increase trials for cancer drugs. It's an incredible thing that we've got coming our way. It's going to cost £30 million. The foundation already has £20 million to pay for it, and every penny raised at the Great North Run will go towards that. It's incredible to have that facility in Newcastle. Of course it is. It's also a sad thing because it speaks to how many people suffer from cancer or know people who suffer from cancer. So the three of us are doing it. If you search on Just Giving for Bobby's Team 2025, you will see us. obviously any sponsorship would be gratefully received. It's an incredible cause. I'm very proud to be a patron of the foundation, and and so it's my day when all the emotion comes out, and I think about Bobby, and I think about my grandma, and I think about Pat, whose strength I can't sort of get to grips with, and I think about myself, and I run for myself, and the love that I've lost too.
Well, good luck to everybody. Good luck to you, George. Good luck to producer Ollie and Jacob, of course, everybody else in Bobby's team. And good luck to all of our listeners who are running the Great North Run as well. I'm sure there's a lot of you out there who are taking part. Good luck. Have a fantastic day. It is genuinely one of the best days of the year in the Northeast. I hope you enjoy every single second of it. And I might even see some of you down at the finish line, because I'm down there as well on Sunday. That's it. Thank you very much, chaps. Thank you, George, for your time.
Cheers, lads. See you next week.
Thanks a lot, Chris.
You're very welcome. Yes, see everyone next week, and best of luck to everyone. Generally mean that. Absolutely wonderful, everyone who's running it.
That's it. We'll speak to you very soon from everybody at Pod on the Tyne. Have a lovely weekend. Take care. We'll see you on the other side. Goodbye.
Take care, you know what it means, look after yourself, good luck.